Accession number 4618, Reel 2.
Mr. Douglas, Reel 2.
When I came back home, I was posted first of all to the Isle of Ely. Now, remember, I'd been abroad on the desert for in the heat for 3.5 years. And I came back in December, and it was really cold, you know. Came back to ice and snow. And I was posted to the Isle of Ely, which is in the Inner Hebrides. And I didn't go there. Oh, I wrote and asked, could I be posted nearer home or farther south, you know, having been 3.5 years abroad. And they posted me to RAF Aston Down near Gloucester, which was a Spitfire training pilot station. What do I remember about Aston Down? I couldn't scrounge a trip in a Spit because they're single-seaters. Although I think Ireland's got a couple of twin-seaters, haven't they? Spitfire. I think there were a few built. Aston Down, the only thing I remember there doing clerical work was night time clearing the runways of snow. It was in the winter time so that these lads could fly the Spits they were training. An OTU, Operational Training Unit. From there I was posted to RAF station Portreath in Cornwall, which is now a poison gas place, I suppose, so they say. Excuse me. And at Portreath, I did the same sort of work, you know, very busy, paperwork, you know. And I... Oh, and then a letter came from the AOC records saying that to the CO, Group Captain J.A. Boret, B-O-R-E-T, who lost his son in the Middle East shortly afterwards, Boret saying the above-named airman, me, had applied for a commission in the admin branch and had been recommended for a commission in the admin branch of the Royal Air Force in the Middle East on so-and-so and so-and-so. In view of AMO so-and-so, Amency Order so-and-so, this one that said if you're under the age of 32 and fit for flying duties, you can't be commissioned in the ground branches. Because of this AMO, is ineligible to receive this commission, or something to that effect. So I thought, hello. I'd got in my pocket, in my wallet, a copy of my medical certificate, because the airman, you get a copy, a legal copy of your medical, when you're medical boarded, as well as one going to records to go in your documents, your Form 48, if I remember correctly. And as well as when going to the unit, you get one yourself. I've still got that at home, which said I'm permanently unfit. And I thought, I've never spoken about it till now. I haven't even told my wife. So I said to myself, well, they cannot have at records in Gloucester, I think it was, or whatever it was then, or Ruislip, they can't have in records a copy of my medical from the Middle East, where I was recommended for this commission in the admin branch, you know, as a pen pusher. They can't have it. It must have gone down, as lots of things went down on, you know, in a shot down or ships were sunk. So I said nothing. I said, OK, apply for flying training, which I could back home. So I wrote the application out for flying training. And eventually I went to Western Sioux. I was interviewed by the groupie. I went to Western Supermare, had a medical. The greatest day of my life up to then. When I got that chit, fit for flying, fit to learn to fly, I think it said. Fit to learn to fly. And I went on the beer.
Coming back.
And then eventually I went to Canada and flew.
Coming back to your pre-war days at Farnborough, did you go from Farnborough to the Middle East?
No. I went to... they used to push you around every... I suppose it was getting experience. No, from Farnborough, I was posted to 98 Bomber Squadron, so-called. Then they had Hawker Audaxes at Hucknall in Nottingham. And that was good.
How
I had
was
lots
it good?
Of trips there. It was good, because I could get up in the air.
What
squadron
kind?
Leader Donkin. R.H. Donkin was the CO. Nice chap. He was too old to fly then, I think.
What was the atmosphere in the squadron?
The atmosphere in the squadron? Everybody was full out for flying. Well, as I saw it, oh, I don't know, there was some that didn't like flying, I suppose. An armourer there, because armourers were getting promotion left, right and centre, you know. This was end of 37, beginning of 38. And an armourer, Peter Davis, I can see him now, he's dead. Peter Davis was an armourer there, and we used to go down Hucknall to the have a few jugs, you know. The beer was good. We once went, I don't think Peter came on this. What were the an aircraft had crashed, a bomber from Scampton, I think, had crashed at on Kinder Scout in Derbyshire. And three of us went up to guard it, I think they said. We had to spend the night up there in the clouds. Oh, that's digressing. An armourer, Peter Davis, was a friend of mine there. We're in the same billet. I don't know, we felt the same, ain't? The next time I saw him, he was a flying officer, navigator, in Blenheims, landed at Ismailia when I was with Charlie Chaplin, with this number one GI unit, with these Wellingtons. He landed, and I just happened to see him walking down the road. They landed, they were going to Greece. This was before Crete had fallen. And the whole squadron was wiped out, they told me. He never came back. They said, in Greece, because there's a hell of a lot of trouble in Greece. The whole squadron was wiped out. I think they were Blenheims. They could have been bow fighters. This was when, because at one stage we were all geared up when I was on the desert. We were all geared up to go to Greece, through Turkey into Greece. And I think the Turks, it's been written since, the Turks wouldn't let us go through. And I know the movement orders did come out when I was on the desert. Movement order to go to Greece, the guys on the list. But it was cancelled because there was some diplomatic stuff. They wouldn't let us go in. Otherwise, that would have shortened the war by a couple of years.
You've referred several times to the expansion in the RAF, which had occurred at this time in the late 30s. What were relations like between the men like yourself who were part of this expansion and those men who'd served for a long time, since perhaps the 20s?
I think we were welcomed. We were welcomed. I say at Farnborough, I was taught to play tennis, and I'll play you tennis today. And I don't know, you may be a Buster Botcher, but I'll beat you at tennis today. Do you play tennis?
I bet.
Oh, no. Never mind. The relationships were very good. I can't remember ever hearing anyone say anything derogatory about. There wasn't them and us. We were all part of the same service. There was no division. Not that I can remember. The division was between the brats, as they call them, the boys, you know. The boys who came in at 16 to do an apprentice photography course and became men at the age of 18, you know. These became the super photographers, I suppose, of the war.
What was the main character of the difference between the ones who came in as boys and the others?
Why do I think it was perhaps one of envy on the regulars' part. No, that's too strong. Perhaps there was, from the point, thinking back, the point of view of the older photographers, because there weren't many photographers then, you know. I think there's only about 30 on a course until they started to expand.
So the regulars felt that the brats had more possibility of promotion and advantage.
They would have eventually, yes, but promotion was very slow then. I remember Shepherd was a corporal, and he'd been in donkey's years. But he seemed... There wasn't the thirst or the thrust for... you were either promoted or you weren't, you know. I don't think... I remember Stowe. Stowe, the photographer, he'd been in LAC for donkey's years. He'd done two tours abroad, one in the Far East, you know. And I don't remember anyone saying, you know, it's time I was a corporal. I don't know, it's too far back. I can't remember any main differences between them.
Did you receive your posting to the Middle East whilst you were at Hucknall?
Yes.
What was your reaction when you heard that you were going abroad?
Well, at that time it was almost inevitable. You served 2 years and then you knew you were going abroad because we had the British Empire then, you know. I looked forward to it. Mother didn't like it, of course, you know, but I looked forward to it. You were put... there was what was called the PWR, I suppose it still exists. You were put on the... perhaps 3 months before, on the preliminary warning roll that you were going abroad. You didn't know where. And you were given a month's leave or something like that. And you went on your called PWR leave, overseas leave. And then when you went back to your station, you just waited for the actual movement order to come. And I went... when did I receive mine? I went to RAF Andover. They were practice bombing, you know, with 11.5-pound white practice bombs, smoke bombs, with these Hawker Hinds, they were, not Audax, Hawker Hinds. I've got a photograph somewhere. I'm trying to remember Mosley. Sergeant Mosley was a chap who came from Walsall, which is only 6 miles from where I live, and he used to give me, any time there was ballast, I'd scrounge a trip with him. I was put on the PWR. I had my, I think it was 3 weeks or a month's leave, and then went back, and then we were going, before anything came about, going to Southampton to go abroad, we went down to Andover. I went down by lorry, and they were, I had one or two trips in the back as ballast, practice bombs with at Porton Ranges. And it was while we were down there that the signal came in saying I'd got to go to, and a few more of us, about six altogether, had got to and train for Southampton in 2 days' time. So we had a quick night at home, I think, and then we went down to Southampton and got on the, what was it? HT, the Hired Transport, Dorsetshire. I've got a picture of it somewhere at home. And there is a trooping ship. And I've often thought it was called the HT, and I was told the initials meant hired transport. It showed you that we weren't prepared for trooping, even in those days. Money was being spent by people hiring out boats to transport troops out to the Middle and Far East. Even then, I would have thought that the British forces would have had their own trooping boats. Still, that's getting in the realms of money, I suppose. And I went out, we went out and we got off. We didn't know where we were going. We got off the boat. We got, you know, KD, OC's kit. We got off the boat at Alexandria. And then we were put on the train, about 120, 150 of us. And we went up from Alex right up to Jerusalem. And it was then we knew we were stationed in Jerusalem. And at that time, in Jerusalem was the headquarters of... It was called HQ P and TJ, Headquarters Palestine and Transjordan. And whether Bomber Harris was there then, I don't know. But whether, I don't know, I played a lot of sport. I don't remember doing much work. Oh, I did the Russian things first thing. We had to march down from, we were in an old school. We had to march down in uniform each morning down to the headquarters, just St. Julian's Way, which was a mile, and walk back in pairs. And then gradually, as the troubles began to brew up between, because out there the Arab hated the Jew hated the Arab, and they both hated the British. We had the mandate, you know, from the First World War, from the end of the First World War. We were really in a not a very good position. I know as trouble went on, time went on, we had to go out in pairs if we went out at all. And we had a 3.8 revolver with a 20 rounds, I think, or 10 rounds, in a holster, in cinemas, you know, like this, when we went out. And we were told not to go in cinemas, I think, because the Arabs used to put bombs in the cinemas, you know, just like they do in Northern Ireland now. Had one friend killed there, in Jerusalem, Bob Bowman. His signature's on here, poor old Bob, nice chap. I was a clerk, you know, in the headquarters there. We were mainly, there'd be about 80 to 100, 120. Mainly signallers. Signallers were unit was right on the top of the building. Clerks and transport drivers, you know. Oh, you don't see Bob Bowman's signature. He was killed.
How was he killed?
Being naughty again. Well, we had an order came out. The trouble got so bad that we had to be in by. Oh, there's a curfew. British troops had put a curfew on, and we had to be in by 9 o'clock, I think, if we went out. We had to go out in pairs, in civvies. And about eight of us had gone out, and we could still go in the cafes and drink. Well, anyway, we had a good few jugs, and we broke up. And Bob, I can't think of the other chap's name. They stole a car. I can't think of his name. They stole a car. We didn't have our own guards on our billet. We'd moved the billet from the school then to a place nearer the headquarters because of the, you know, the trouble getting worse. And we had olive groves between around our billet where we were. And we had what they call gaffirs, Palestinian guards, in some sort of brown uniform. I forget what they were Palestinian. They used to guard us, you see, just so that release us for, you know, work in the headquarters. This particular night, so the story says, I wasn't there when Bob pinched the car. Two of them, Bob and I forget his name, stole this car and went driving off and playing merry hell and came stumbling. Oh, and somebody had reported, they said, the Jew had reported the car stolen, and the police there were the Palestine police, which were British forces, ex-army people mainly, you know. And the Palestine police were out looking for this car, and they were around our olive grove, and apparently Bob comes staggering in, you know, having a few, dumped the car somewhere, and was challenged in the, it's night time, you know, challenged in the olive grove, and Bob took no notice, and this Palestine policeman shot him. Bob fell to the floor, so they say, and pulled his 3.8 out and started shooting off all over the place. And they put two more into him, and he died about 5 days afterwards. It's a silly thing that, you know, shouldn't have happened.
Did you and your comrades feel apprehensive as you went about in Jerusalem?
No. Oh, no, no, no. So we were wary, you know, but we were young. No.
So you didn't feel that the hostilities were being very effective?
Oh, no, no. You could feel something was... the Stern gang came afterwards, didn't it, at the end of the war, did it? You could feel that there was something coming up. But did I realise it? I don't think we realised it. No, we were there. We joined the Air Force. We joined for so many years to serve, or whatever it was, and we'd been sent there. Okay, we'd been sent there.
What did you and your friends think of the situation between Arab and Jew there. What was your opinion at the time? Did you sympathise with one side or the other?
No, I appreciated the industry of the Jew as compared with the lack of it in the Arab. A Jewish settlement, you could tell right away, it had been cultivated. Barren piece of sandy desert. There were trees growing there, irrigation dishes. A piece of the Arab was just left. They were more industrious. In the shops, you could beat an Arab down if he said 40 piastres for a tie or whatever it was. You know, you could beat him down to 20 or maybe below. You couldn't do that with a Jew. If the Jew said 40 pence, that was the price. Wouldn't go wrong, you know. You knew that after a time.
What was the reaction of you and your friends to that difference?
Well, we tended to play the Arab up, didn't we, you know. But you could barter with the Arab, you couldn't barter with the Jews. I've still got a tie at home, multicoloured one. I refused to have it washed. Four of us bought one, and we said, all the same sort, you know, after we beat him. We beat him down from 40 acres to about 9 or 10, I think. Of course, he'd probably half inch them anyway. I don't know. And Tommy Owers, Wacker Payne, I can't think of the other chap's name, and myself, four of us. We bought one, we said, right, every day, every night, this time, well, I don't know, it was December or something, we've forgotten it since, we'll wear the tie, no matter where we are, we may happen to see each other. I still got it at home. I wear it occasionally.
Did you have any social contact with either the Arabs or the Jews?
No, not really. Apart from... we used to play football and hockey and tennis with the various national clubs. The Greek club we'd play. We never played against the Arabs, I don't think. I can't remember playing against a Jewish team. We did play the Germans. The Germans were... In the German hospital, there were two or three doctors that were really good tennis players. And we used to delight playing them. You remember when Hitler walked into Czechoslovakia sometime in 38, August 38, was it? There was a big panic on. Oh, you know, Chamberlain's piece of paper. I'm sure it was that.
Autumn 38.
Was that it? Well, at that stage, we were playing once a fortnight. We were playing the German hospital at tennis. And I learnt my tennis with Stowey at Farnborough, you know. I really enjoyed it. And when Jerry walked into Czechoslovakia and the big panic was on, I remember because I was duty clerk in the headquarters that night, and the cipher officer, two cipher officers came in a panic, and then I had to take a sealed message across to the duty officer. Nice chap. In the KD, in the King David, he was. Anyway, when Jerry walked into Czechoslovakia, the German people in Jerusalem walked into the embassy of the Czechs in Jerusalem. Took over their embassy.
And did the Czechs resist?
I don't know. We didn't know. We just played tennis. But we received an invitation to a big nosh-up, big do, by the Germans at the check-in, and we had a marvellous do. Never thought of the implications of it. And we drank all the wines out of the Czech cellars, you know. Well, whether there was anything... Oh, I don't know. We didn't think about it. We enjoyed the tennis. We enjoyed the Germans' company.
So there were no Czechs around in the Czech embassy?
Oh, no. Whether they'd been... we don't know. We didn't ask. I remember that vividly.
So there was no hostility towards the Germans at that time?
Oh, no, no. We were... we thought about them later on, but they must have been interned, you know, at Because we were out on the desert then. They must have been interned. I often thought about them. But they talked, they knew Birmingham, you know, we talked about the football teams. Whether there was anything then, you know, I've often thought since, I was only young then, whether there was anything malicious or between the German doctors then, because they're the doctors we played. Whether they're trying to get anything from us, I don't know. But I don't think so, no. You ask about contact with the Jews and Arabs. The only contact we had was in shops, apart from when war was declared in September 39, the Palestine conflict was scrubbed, I think. And we did have, I can remember, Zilberstein. He was a Polish Jew that had come out of Poland. At the time, he said, when Britain was blockading, there was a lot of trouble, wasn't there? When Hitler was chasing the Jews before 1939, there was a lot of Jews getting out and coming in ships and trying to get into Palestine, and we were turning them back, I think. The British Navy, it seemed a bit wrong. Anyway, there's all sorts of ways of getting in. And Zilberstein was one of the Polish Jew who came to me as a orderly room clerk, you know. He was a nice chap. He did send me a Christmas card after the war from Palestine, but I've lost track of him since.
Were your own personal duties in Jerusalem similar to those that you'd had in the United Kingdom?
Yes, to do with movement, transport, documentation, rationing in the headquarters unit. One would think, I don't know, perhaps now there were perhaps a lot of people that could have been cut down, jobs could have been cut down, I think. I don't know, perhaps not. We enjoyed the games. We played a lot of games, a lot of football, a lot of tennis.
After your spell at headquarters in Jerusalem, you went to Ramleh. How did
yes.
that change come about?
Ramleh, well, the general movements, you know, you were kept at certain, perhaps, I don't know, maybe the chap before me at Ramleh had been finished his tour and had gone home. It just came out as a general movement. Oh, Doug, you're posted to Ramleh. Oh, 6th Squadron are there. And they'd got, I think they had Lysanders in afterwards. 6th Squadron. I think they'd got Audaxes or Hines. That was interesting. Ramleh is, you ever been to Palestine?
No.
Are you married?
Yes.
Take your wife on a trip from Jerusalem in April when the orange blossoms are in bloom. There's no scent like it. You drive through about 10, 20 miles of orange groves going to the sea to Tel Aviv. It's beautiful. It pervades you. It stays with you for days. Beautiful. Orange blossom smell. Where were we? Ramleh.
What did the base look like at Ramleh? Can you describe it?
Yeah, just a grass field with barbed wire around. Armoured cars had to, you know, because of the trouble. Of course, we had armoured cars in Jerusalem too.
They had to patrol the perimeter.
Oh, yes. Whether the armoured cars patrolled the perimeter, I don't know. They patrolled the roads. A thing about travelling by train, there was one track from, railway track from Ramleh, from Tel Aviv and Jaffa, right up into the hills, into Jerusalem. And the Wogs used to blow it up on occasions, you know. And I thought this was a bit cruel. Still, all's fair in love and war.
Well, did you think that was unfair?
No. What was a bit nasty was they used to capture Arab prisoners, right? The army would. And they'd, on the front of the train, they'd have an extension about 20 feet. I don't know. And on there, they would tie, handcuff, two prisoners. So that if they were going to get blown, if the train was going to get, they were going to get blown up first. That wasn't nice. Perhaps you ought to scrub that. I don't know.
And were your own duties at Ramleh the same as those at Jerusalem?
Yes, or paperwork. Paperwork, yes. The best thing I used to do, I think, was all the signals, when the troubles were really at their height, copies of the signals had to go to the CO, the station CO, of all yesterday's signals, you know, and I had the job of sorting through 500 or 600 signal forms and sorting out the relevant ones, those with what was called XX messages,